And now, Marion Joyce Consumer Talk. Here's Marion Joyce.
Hello, and a big welcome to you, my friends, to the Marion Joyce Show. I am Marion Joyce, and I am so glad you're joining me today. We cover a wide variety of important topics, things that are very important for you and to you, and frequently things you don't even hear about on other shows, like cutting-edge medical discoveries, travel information, shopping and household hints, celebrity and author interviews, and a lot more. And today I would like to sing Rock-a-bye Baby on the Treetop. The reason we sing babies' lullabies is because we realize how important sleep is for their growth and their well-being. And people do not realize that as they grow up and when they're adults, sleep is still a vital, very, very important component of their health. And it directly and indirectly affects all the systems in your body. So with that in mind, I am thrilled to bring to the show Dr. Fulvia Millett. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
And she is the director of sleep medicine for White Plains Hospital. And she's going to talk to us about a lot of the very important things that sleep is not merely just a luxury, but is an important component often ignored by lots and lots of people. For example, I think that one-third of adults get less than the recommended amount of sleep. So that is why the doctor is here to give us some really important information about why we should take adult and childhood and adults growing into adulthood and teenagers very, very important for all of our health. So first of all, how much sleep should an adult get typically?
So typically, enough sleep is anywhere between 7 to 9 hours of sleep. And it doesn't change much. After you reach age 18, 7 to 9 hours, going down to, in as a senior, 7 to 8 hours of sleep is recommended.
I see. And what happens if you, you know, if you, let's say you have 5 or 6 hours of sleep for an adult, what is it usually, how can you tell that you haven't had enough sleep?
So if you are feeling unrefreshed when you wake up or unable to concentrate or feeling that you're still tired during the day, you are not getting enough sleep. There are people who don't need, can tolerate having 6 hours of sleep regularly, but in general, less than 6 hours of sleep is considered sleep deprivation. If it's chronically averaging 6 hours of sleep over more than 3 months, for instance. So that is the general thought that one is sleep deprived if, on average, they're getting less than 6 hours of sleep, and the signs are sleeplessness during the day, I mean sleepiness during the day, and feeling unrefreshed when you wake up.
Okay. Now, according to everything I've read, there is a strong correlation between lack of sleep or sleep deprivation and chronic diseases. Could you explain, for example, what some of the chronic diseases are that will affect you if you don't get enough sleep?
So sleep deprivation has been related to cardiovascular disease. High blood pressure, heart disease are commonly associated. It's also related to various other things. It's been related to depression, neurological issues. For instance, if you're sleep deprived, you're more likely to feel pain at a lower threshold, and you're able to tolerate pain better if you're not sleep deprived. There's growth and restoration issues that occur with sleep deprivation. For instance, growth hormone is secreted in during sleep and during certain periods of sleep and deep sleep. So there's also growth and restoration issues. There's endocrinological issues. There's an increase in glucose intolerance in people who are sleep deprived.
So in other words, a lot of them will develop diabetes.
Well, glucose intolerance is what's been proven. Full diabetes is less well controlled. That's been shown, but that would be the next step in the research to actually prove that next step.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that goes especially for teenagers and young people who think they could just get away with, you know, going out late at night and getting up early morning for school or for their sports activities, and it's not true.
So, yes, the many kids and teenagers are sleep-deprived, especially during the week, and they end up catching up on the weekends, which
you can really catch up somewhat
on the weekends. But then what happens is if you sleep until, you know, 10, 12 hours on Saturday and Sunday, and then on Sunday night, and this is what often happens, there's trouble falling asleep again, so that then on Monday you start the week out again sleep-deprived. So the irregular sleep cycles that occur when somebody is chronically sleep deprived during the week and then trying to catch up on the weekends is a perpetuating cycle.
Now, I've noticed that when I have trouble controlling what I'm eating, and a lot of people tell me that they have weight gain when they're not getting enough sleep. Is that true?
Yes, there's been shown to be an increase in the desire for carbohydrates in those who are sleep-deprived, and it seems to be related to the increased secretion of a hormone named ghrelin, which it controls the desire for eating and specifically for carbohydrates. So, yes, there has been a relationship of weight with sleep deprivation. And then there's the other issue that with weight gain, there may be some sleep disorders that develop with weight gain, making it harder and more difficult to exercise. So there's also the sleepiness that occurs because of other sleep disorders that can occur with weight gain. So it's like being in quicksand. Once you're sleep deprived, there's multiple issues that make it harder and harder to lose weight and easier to gain.
I think that most adults with children realize that emotional and psychological problems, for example, children being, if they didn't get it, they're tired, they're irritable, they're moody, they have poor emotional regulation and less control, that they are feeling the same things, but the parents recognize that in their children, but they don't recognize that necessarily in themselves. And so adults have to realize that the emotional and psychological problems do arise with depression, and you're more irritable, you're not able to take the common problems that are going on that we usually would just you'd slide by, but there's much more moodiness and irritable and poor emotional regulation with lack of sleep.
Yeah, that is very true. The difficulty in recognizing emotion in others and difficulty controlling your own emotions has been shown in with sleep deprivation. So, yes, all you're saying is absolutely true.
Well, people who are depressed may not be able to sleep, but people who are unable to sleep may become depressed. So it's sort of like one thing feeds the other.
Exactly. They are mutually working toward each other or against each other.
Now, obviously, if you're not getting enough sleep and you're really tired, you're not going to be able to exercise, which is a very important component of good health. And that goes for children as well as adults. And you may start to take excessive amounts of coffee to stay awake. For school kids, like high school and college, they may start taking excessive, and adults, coffee and caffeine intake with caffeine-rich sodas.
Or energy drinks.
Yeah. So, I mean, these one thing after the other. And also the tremendous increase in the use of electric devices as cell phones, tablets, television, and these computer games continue to wipe out people's hours of sleep and contribute to the sleep deficiency.
Yes, the light from iPhones and iPads definitely affects ability to fall asleep at night. Your biorhythms and the signal to the brain to fall asleep occurs with the secretion of melatonin, which is only secreted when it notices that there's less light. So the continuous exposure to light, especially the light from phones and iPads, prevents the appropriate secretion of this melatonin and the signaling to the brain that it's time to go to sleep. So the recommendation is to stop the usage of that equipment and that electronics at least 30 minutes before you intend to go to bed and not to use them in bed.
You know, it's very important that people recognize that they might have, let's say if they're snoring, sleep apnea, or what are some of the other things that people have from lack of sleep or things that are interfering with their sleep?
So there's the disorders that interfere with sleep or cause frequent arousals during sleep are related to feeling unrefreshed in the morning and feeling tired during the day. And probably the most common thing, is, as you said, is obstructive sleep apnea. That is a disorder of the upper airway becoming obstructed when you're sleeping. So everyone, when they go to sleep, the muscles that keep the airway open become lax, and the airway becomes this floppy tube that is more likely to close in certain people if they start out smaller, for instance, anatomy, just the way you're made, or if there's excess tissue around the airway causing to start out smaller, for instance, in people who are obese. So this continuous closure of the upper airway causes the brain to wake you up because it won't let you just lie there and suffocate. It either brings you to a lighter stage of sleep to open up the airway, or makes you wake up outright. If your sleep is continuously disrupted, you can't get to the deep sleep and REM sleep. That's part of the problem with feeling unrefreshed in the morning, the lack of the amount of deep sleep and amount of REM sleep that people with disorders that disrupt their sleep, like sleep apnea, have. So other things
right.
that can cause
it. Right, they say that 25 million Americans really have sleep apnea, and 80% of them have been undiagnosed, so they don't even know that they have it.
Right.
But then they're feeling tired. Also, they may feel like their hearts are beating too fast. You get heart arrhythmias. And if they took their blood pressure, they'd find that they have higher blood pressure because they're not getting enough sleep, and they have sleep apnea.
Right. Yes.
The other thing that someone mentioned to me, one of my listeners, is that they get repetitive, brief muscle twitches and jerking motions in their legs, and that may be a result of sleep abnormalities?
So there's this disorder that occurs during wakefulness called restless leg syndrome. That's not diagnosed on a sleep study. That's just diagnosed with symptoms that somebody reports. And that the symptoms are a need to move your legs, and there's this indescribable need to move that only is relieved with moving them. It's worse at night and goes away in the morning. Then a large percentage of those people during the night have something called periodic limb movement disorder. That's what's diagnosed on a sleep study. And that is, it can cause frequent disruption of sleep because it can cause arousals. People can have 25, 30 times an hour of limb movement and wake up from it 10 or 12 times an hour. So it can, if you have that plus sleep apnea, imagine waking up 30 times an hour from your sleep apnea and another 10 from your limb movements. You're not getting any sleep that is of, you know, good quality at all. So limb movement disorder is a significant issue as well.
What is people say they have insomnia. What does it mean to have insomnia? Is it just falling asleep, or is it trouble staying asleep, or what?
So insomnia is difficulty sleeping. That's a definition that people use, the lay community. But insomnia it can be related to difficulty staying asleep, and that can be a sign of sleep apnea, or it can be difficulty sleeping. But there is a difficulty sleeping that is not related to anything that's waking you up. It's just difficulty sleeping. And that can be, that's a pure insomnia. People with insomnia are different than people who are having their sleep disrupted. They generally have trouble falling asleep. They might feel fatigued during the day, but they really can't. It's not that they fall asleep at different times during the day. They can't fall asleep no matter how tired they are. They just never get to sleep. And that's a different disorder entirely that does not require any evaluation in the sleep lab. That often requires behavioral therapy, and that's been shown to be the best therapy for pure insomnia without any other sleep disorder that is disrupting sleep.
Would insomnia be caused possibly by medical conditions like gastrointestinal issues or asthma or hyperthyroidism?
So, yes, sleep disruptions that are caused by medical issues, yes. So commonly as people get older, the issue with their sleep is that they're waking up short of breath from congestive heart failure or from their asthma or from reflux, and that's that is a secondary insomnia that needs to be, treat the medical disorder, and hopefully the insomnia improves.
Right. Now, one of the sleep disruptions among older people that I hear about is potentially from psychological issues like depression, feelings of anxiety, and not able to function the way they would if they were getting their sleep.
So, yeah, there's a very common association of sleeplessness with depression. It can be... So people with depression can either be overly tired and fatigued all the time if their depression isn't well treated, and then they can have the other effect where they can't sleep. And also, ironically, a lot of the depression medications cause insomnia. So there's a big relationship of sleep and depression. One of the things we think about in people who complain of early morning arousals is anxiety and depression. It can be one of the first signs of it. So there's an intimate relationship between sleep and depression, and getting it just right in people who are depressed and are being treated for depression is often a challenge and difficult, but very important to do the best we can. Because, like again, what you said, if they're not sleeping well, their depression can never fully be treated.
I see. We are talking to a very, very committed, wonderful doctor, Dr. Millette. She's an MD, Director of Sleep Medicine at White Plains Hospital. Now, there are very many things that they can do to diagnose. And when did one sleep seek help and go to see you, doctor?
So the times to worry about your sleep is if there's you're getting multiple hours of sleep, and no matter how much you're sleeping, you're not feeling refreshed. So that's one extreme, and the other extreme is if no matter what you do, you feel like you can't sleep. So either one of those extremes may require some intervention. So let's start with the people who are sleeping long, long hours and not feeling refreshed. The most common issue to worry about in those cases is if there's a problem with their breathing during their sleep, and that would require a nighttime sleep study to evaluate further. So that's one thing. The other thing is if there's any unusual behavior during sleep, if there's waking up, any acting out of dreams, any waking up in the middle of the night and doing things that may be dangerous during their sleep, any movements that are repetitive during sleep that they're not aware of, but a patient's partner
Does
might be aware of.
Does that have to do with, like, sleepwalking and things like that?
If there's any, yes, sleepwalking in general doesn't need, if it's truly just sleepwalking, which is common in childhood, doesn't need further evaluation, but just to determine that it is just sleepwalking, it should be looked into. The things we worry about in adults who are acting out dreams is something called REM behavior disorder, which is a an issue of a lack of paralysis during REM sleep, which to explain further, most people are paralyzed during REM, but in this disorder, you lose your paralysis and you're able to act out your dreams, which can be very dangerous.
That could be horrible.
Awful.
Now, some people get night terrors. Is that part of that?
Night terrors are though scary, they're common in childhood. They usually go away as you get into adulthood. It's something that happens in deep sleep. It's nothing dangerous. It scares the people around you more than the person who's actually it's happening to. They're screaming. They often have no recollection of the event in the morning. Again, to determine the difference between all of these is important because, for instance, frontal lobe seizures can mask as any one of these disorders. So making sure that there's nothing more serious and to determine exactly what the disorder is important if there's any abnormal behaviors at night.
I see. I mean, I have been with a couple of children who had night terrors, and their terror is real. I mean, and they are uncontrollably frightened.
If they have a clear recollection of the event, it might not be a night terror, but a nightmare.
In other words, if they can recollect it, it's a nightmare. If it's a night terror,
usually children are screaming. They look like they're, it's a horrible thing happening, and then they go right back to sleep. So mm-hmm. it's the parents who are more worried than the child.
Now, what should people expect? I understand that White Plains has a brand new, pretty brand new, a sleep center. Where is that sleep center?
The sleep center is close to the hospital in White Plains. It's a new facility. It's a state-of-the-art facility with up-to-date equipment in a beautiful and pleasing environment. There's 5 bedrooms, and each bedroom has their private bathroom and then a control room where the technician would stay and monitor patients overnight. If somebody does go for a sleep study, it would entail going there at night and being set up for the sleep study. They would be set up with multiple monitoring equipment, many monitoring equipment that to monitor their EEG, their airflow, effort to breathe with belts around their chest and abdomen, EKG monitoring, oxygen level monitoring. They're even videotaped. And all of this happens all night long, and then in the morning at 6 a.m. they're sent home. And then it takes some time for all this information to be evaluated and for a report. And it's looking for, again, breathing patterns, movement patterns, abnormal EEG patterns, and behavioral patterns.
Right. Is there a way to improve your sleep by eating certain foods?
Warm drinks in general help to kind of prepare you for bed. Melatonin supplements is probably the best over-the-counter dietary supplement and has been proven to improve sleep somewhat.
What about the consumption of alcohol?
So alcohol is very good at helping you fall asleep better and faster, and then in the second half of the night, it totally disrupts your sleep.
Really?
I'm sure people would recognize that they often wake up frequently in the second half of the night.
Mm-hmm.
So alcohol in general is probably not the best thing to do if you want to sleep good. And if there's any evidence of sleep apnea, worsens sleep apnea. And you probably recognize anybody who snores, if they have a little extra wine on the night, before they go to sleep, their snoring will worsen. So even just snoring worsens, but their, sleep apnea worsens, sleep patterns worsen. So certainly not anything that will help your sleep.
What is a telephone number that people can call if they feel that they need some medical attention to their sleep problems?
So the sleep lab, you can contact the sleep lab at White Plains with this number. It's 914-681-2626. In general, a consult with either your primary care doctor, and he should determine that there's some need for a sleep study or for further evaluation would be needed before actually contacting the sleep study. Sorry?
Would that be covered by Medicare or any insurance?
It would be covered pretty much by all insurances at a consultation. The sleep study would be determined what's covered and what isn't by what is found on the consult or what complaints are provided by the referring physician.
How long do you usually sleep in a light sleep and compared to when you get into that deep REM sleep?
So sleep is divided into 90-minute intervals. And so in each 90-minute interval, you usually go through sleep. There's 4 stages of sleep, 1, 2, 3, and REM sleep. So the pattern
is
one.
Tell me that again. I couldn't hear all of that.
So we have these 90-minute intervals of sleep, and in each interval of sleep, there's 4 stages of sleep that you will go through. And we call them N1, N2, N3, and REM sleep. So the pattern is usually N1 to N2 to N3, back to N2, and then REM. But as the night goes on, these 90-minute intervals have less stage 3 sleep, and the amount of REM becomes more. So at the end of the night, your REM will be the longest interval, and at the end of the night, the stage 3 will be the shortest. But it's basically changing, or it's starting a new interval every 90 minutes. So on total of all these intervals over a 7-hour period, it's usually about 20% REM. It's about 50% stage 2, about 20% stage 3, and the rest is stage 1.
Say this again. It's 20% REM.
20% stage 3. 50% stage 2. And the rest is a little bit of stage 1 and wake, sort of interspersed in there.
So if someone wakes you up in the middle of your REM sleep, what happens?
Well, it's not good. You're waking up during, probably the most precious part of your sleep.
Right.
You can be within,
it, right?
in a
is that
dream.
When you wake up, you don't know where you are?
Yeah. You have that sleep drunkenness feeling.
And at what point are you dreaming?
So actually people can dream in multiple stages, but the classic stage is during REM sleep.
The classic is REM sleep?
Yeah.
But do you remember the REM sleep dreams or no?
So if you wake up close to the REM, you can remember them. The farther away you are from REM, the less you're like you are to remember the sleep.
Why do some people think that they can remember all their dreams and other people can't remember anything?
Well, if you're waking up frequently during REM or close to REM, you may remember it more. So if people with sleep apnea, sometimes people remember their sleep dreams better.
Interesting. Very interesting. We've been talking and having a fascinating conversation about something that's common to everybody, the need for sleep. And you've been a wealth of information, Doctor. And I can't thank you enough. Can you give us one more time just the number that people can call if they need some help with their sleep?
It is 914-681-2626.
681-2626?
Correct.
Okay. 2626, and that's the 914 area code.
Correct.
All righty. We've been talking to Dr. Sylvia Millett, an MD, Director of Sleep at Sleep Medicine at White Plains Hospital. How do you sleep, Doctor?
I'm sleep-deprived chronically. I go to sleep late to finish the work to treat my patients with sleep disorders.
Okay, thank you so much for being with us. Remember, everybody, getting healthy sleep is important for a healthy life. So try to do your best to follow some of the advice, most of the advice, or all of the advice that we've just gotten from the doctor. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, my pleasure.
And friends, I'm so happy that you could join us today. Nothing like sharing yourself with other people. And keep smiling, because when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you. Have a wonderful day.